Hello, hello. This is your host, Trez Ahmed, ready to kick off another bite-sized episode of the Crypto Valley Association podcast. A special thank you to Seba Bank for supporting this initiative as they pursue their mission to redefine finance for the new economy. Now let's discover together the growing trends of this fast-moving space and try to shed some light on the mysteries it contains. Today, we are joined by Saro Mekina, CEO and co-founder of DeCoco, builder of decentralized autonomous organizations, and the publisher of Alien Worlds, one of the largest blockchain games in the world. So let's dive straight in and uncover the hidden world of DAOs. Hello, Saro. How are you doing today?
Hey, Shiraz. It's great to be here. Lovely to join all of your Swiss and international guests.
Wonderful. It's a pleasure to have you. And how about we kick this whole episode off by hearing about how you first got involved in the blockchain world.
Yeah, so we started life as a team being a block producer, which is like being a miner on a number of chains, especially EOS.io chains. So those are the chains that run the code base that was developed around the launch of the EOS blockchain. So we were a block producer. In particular, we were kind of unusual in being a block producer that was organized as a DAC. At the time, we were calling them DACs, Decentralized Autonomous Community. And since then, we've started to use the terminology DAO, which has become more industry standard, but it's the same thing. So we were, at the time, one of the largest DACs because we were revenue generating as a block producer. We were one of the only block producers that was formed as a DAC, and we kind of had to learn how to do that, create the code, and also the sort of community technology for how to bring a group of people together to do something as kind of complicated as being a block producer. So that was a great lesson. And we took some of those learnings through to subsequent projects as DeCoco, and then ultimately decided to combine all of that learning and our love of DAOs and building DAOs with NFTs into the game Alien Worlds, which then became hugely successful. We were the first, Alien Worlds was the first game to exceed 100,000 users, the first game to exceed 1 million users, and then to exceed 2 million users. And for a time, we were actually the largest dApp by users in the world. It's a rapidly evolving space, so the kind of numbers go up and down in terms of our ranking. But yeah, huge growth. And we're really excited now to be delivering our roadmap and empowering our community to build on Alien Worlds.
Wow, incredible. Yeah, looking forward to hearing a little bit more about Alien Worlds. But maybe we stick on to DeCoco now, and now I understand why it was DeCoco as well. So tell us more about what you're doing with regards to the building of DAOs.
Yeah, so the code base that we use is really powerful in building multi-sig permissions that you can layer up on top of each other to create these DAOs. So a DAO is a tokenized entity that combines within one single unit of measurement, which is the token that sits at the core of the DAO. It combines in that one unit both stake and value. So by stake, I mean voting. So if I have one DAO token, I have one vote power within the DAO, and I can obtain that DAO token either by working within the DAO. So normally there are worker proposals that are a kind of important part of how a DAO functions. The DAO can get people to do work for it. But also, you know, you can normally buy the DAO tokens. And by buying tokens, that also secures the DAO from takeover. So you can either put in financial value or your own working value. And this is how the DAO expands. And we think it's a very natural governance mechanism on blockchains. It's a very good way of using a blockchain and using tokens to organize groups of people towards a common purpose, and really rapidly, but also with longevity and legacy mechanisms built in, bring a group of people together so that they can do something that they define, and they define the rules of how they engage with each other.
I see. Wow, incredible. And would you like to talk to us a little bit about some of the use cases or some of the examples that you've helped support? You mentioned EOS a little bit before, but I think there's also Liberland as well.
Yeah. So we weren't involved except as a block producer on EOS, but we did create EOS DAC, which was a block producer and formed as a DAC, a project that was conceived at the time of the launch of the EOS blockchain. And we could see, in particular, my co-founders who were mainly driving that, could see that bringing a block producer together as a DAC would be a really great way of mobilizing a community around block production. So block production or mining, normally I'll mention that block production on these chains is not environmentally intensive in the way that mining on Bitcoin is. So that's why we use the term block producer rather than miner, because you're not actually doing a lot of work in order to do it. But it's still a value generative activity, right? So, you know, normally chains have some inflation that they direct towards node validators or block producers. And so using that as a starting point, that's a really great way to bring a community together, because you've got this entity that's then generating revenue or generating value. So the conception was that that value could then be disseminated towards a group of workers who could then use that to create the code base and the other mechanisms to build more DAGs and to help more DAGs. Mm-hmm. So we had a concept of building something called what we were calling at the time the DAG factory, which was a sort of standardized set of processes and a really easy way for people to click through and create their own tokenized DAG. And it was using mm-hmm. the exact same software that we ourselves used as EOS DAG. So that project, I think one of the things that we found was that it was possibly a little bit too early to get businesses to adopt DAC technology as a way of actually running their affairs. So we did sort of have early users of our software, in particular, a community called Crown and a community called Vigor and some others who did take it up and ran with it. But we found that the kind of mass adoption was a little bit harder to achieve because possibly the technology was a little bit too early stage for a business to convert its operations into mm-hmm. being on chain and into being organized as a DAC. So that was when we kind of began to see, well, what's another way that we can get people to use this technology, learn this technology, and not only the technology, but sometimes I call it kind of the social technology of, you know, mm-hmm. how do you organize yourself into a decentralized community that's still creating value, remaining focused, able to hold people accountable for workflows and so on. You know, there's a reason why systems and structures tend towards hierarchy, I think, and it's because, you know, that is one way of getting things done. If you're going to create a decentralized structure, a decentralized community, you have to figure out how to actually make it work at a human level, right? In addition to at a technical level. And so I think we were learning all of those things about, you know, how do you create sub-teams and groups of people that can do things, and how can they be accountable to the DAC, and how can you structure worker proposals in a way that makes sense and it incentivizes people enough, but also holds them accountable and so on. So as part of all that, you know, we realized that there was a real role for people learning how to use this technology, both the tech, but also the kind of social processes that had to go along with that. And so we thought, well, maybe a game would be a more accessible way, a more scalable way to do that, something that would reach more people. And of course, at the same time, the Wax blockchain was emerging, which is a chain that is NFT focused. And a lot of our community members had gone from previous chains to Wax. And so we had a sort of natural community there. And so the idea to combine NFTs with DAOs was really the foundational idea behind Alien Worlds.
Wow. Okay. Wonderful. I mean, that transitions so well into Alien Worlds. I mean, maybe you can tell us a little bit more. I watched the really cool trailer to Alien Worlds. Maybe you tell us, our listeners, a little bit more about Alien Worlds and how you came up with the idea around this.
Yeah, so Alien Worlds is a metaverse in which there are six planet DAOs that are competing for the scarce resource, which is Trillium. So you show your support for your planet DAO by staking Trillium into that DAO and then voting on that planet for the counselors that you'd like to represent you. There's also a mining activity, a mining game in which you sign up, you get given an NFT and all the things that you need to start playing. And you can, within a couple of minutes, start earning Trillium and NFTs. It's real proof of work mining. So, you know, that is the same mechanism as Bitcoin mining. So it might be a little bit hard to become a Bitcoin miner today, but you can become a Trillium miner and be using all the same tech. And you can do that within minutes within our mining game. So those are the kind of pillars of the functionality right now is the mining game and DAOs, the competitive DAOs, and the voting and elections that are happening on the DAOs. Very shortly, we are releasing functionality on BSC, on the Binance Smart Chain. So we're one of the only projects that I know of. In fact, we're the only project that I know of that has gaming logic running on three chains. So we're based on WAX, BSC, and Ethereum. So our new game that's being released on BSC is called Missions, and that's where you can send spacecraft on missions and curate a collection of NFTs that you get as a reward, and those NFTs have utility within the missions game. So we also have future functionality. So for example, a fighting game in a Thunderdome, quests and future mechanics. But one thing I will say is that all of those games that we're building are really just the kind of genesis game ideas that we as the founding team are putting together and releasing to the community for use. What we have seen is an explosion of people themselves, community members themselves, delivering their own gaming, little mini games, and also their own products and services into the metaverse. Commercial activity has really blossomed on Alien Worlds. And I think that the metaverse is really everything that people do with Trillium, whether that's us or mm-hmm. other community members. And this is why the metaverse is it's really a platform for people to take forward their own community projects and their own commercial projects.
Yes. Well, I see. And it really sounds like the next level of MMORPG, you know, like playing, for example, World of Warcraft in real life, practically. I mean, it's incredible being an ex-gamer to see some of this innovation. And to transition there, I mean, you spoke about metaverse. It's a buzzword that we've heard so much lately. Can you explain maybe what is the metaverse? What is a metaverse?
Yeah, it's interesting because, you know, we started to conceive of ourselves as a metaverse about 18 months ago when we were designing how all of these mechanics would work. And in the last few months, it's really become a word that other people are playing back to us rather than us being the ones introducing it into the conversation. So that's interesting. I mean, obviously Facebook's statement that they, you know, want to become a metaverse and, would like to sell their hardware into that proposition has helped to define that. But we're a very different type of metaverse. So we're a social metaverse. And we're a social metaverse because we have abstracted economic concepts into blockchain structures that incentivize people to behave competitively and collaboratively. So all we've really done is to create Trillium, the token, these DAO structures, and a few competitive dynamics. And what that has done is it's abstracted an economic layer of activity that has really prompted people to, so basically people are incentivized to earn more Trillium so that then they can grow their power and influence within the metaverse. People have then come together in collaborative units to compete with each other because that's the mechanic that exists. And they're competing with each other in order to win more Trillium and extend their power and influence within the metaverse. So that is a very different conception of the metaverse from the kind of AR, VR, or sort of spatial metaverses that some projects have taken forward, which we think are really interesting and really interesting and great projects, very different from what we're trying to do. So, I mean, a metaverse is some kind of an abstraction of reality in the digital space, right? Mm-hmm. And as such, it needs to be bounded in some way, right? A metaverse is a particular space that's bounded and is distinct from what is outside of it. Now, that boundary can be conceived of as a sort of physical boundary, right? Like a neighborhood or a district, a space that is built out, like for example, built out in AR or VR, so that then you kind of enter the metaverse, you might put on a headset or you might interact with it visually through a user interface. You walk around, you look to the left, you look to the right, you walk forward, you do things within the metaverse and so on. So that's one conception of how you would bound a metaverse and give it a kind of spatial identity. That's not what we've done. We've conceived of the boundary of the metaverse as being everything that Trillium touches, right? So everything that you can do to earn more Trillium, whether that's your own commercial activity, right? So you can just, you know, you could walk up to somebody else in the metaverse and offer them a service, like I'll do an NFT drop for you, and they pay you for that. Well, that's part of the metaverse, right? You didn't have to put on an AR or VR headset to do that. All you had to do was make a connection with somebody else, offer something, and then you were away. So our conception of the metaverse is what is bounded by these economic mechanisms. what that means, therefore, is that it's far more total, right? So the metaverse comes to where you are, right? You can meet someone else in real life, and that's part of the metaverse. You can have a conversation with somebody on Telegram, and that's part of the metaverse. You can offer a commercial service, and that's part of the metaverse. As long as it's something that Trillium is touching or being involved with, it's part of what is going on. That has proven to be very quick to market, very scalable, and very compelling for people because, you know, although it's a very interesting R&D initiative to kind of build out these big AR and VR landscapes, not many people that I meet actually want to spend a huge amount of time in those environments. What they actually want to do is augment their lives with value, meaning, meeting other people that they want to meet. And so By abstracting an economic layer and by using Trillium as the thing that bounds the metaverse, that means that you can add alien worlds to your life. You can bring it to where you are. You know, you know, eventually your children could be playing an NFT game or going to school within part of the metaverse. It doesn't mean that that has to be removed from what they're doing in the rest of their lives. It means that you add these components of activity that are economically valuable to you from the metaverse into your own life where it is. And that's actually been what's happened so far. So we've had communities take up the gaming, communities take up commercial activity. And that's part of why this has scaled to be the market leading blockchain game. I think we're now the number two, but the massive growth and scale that I think we saw was due to the fact that that we were able to go to where people were and meet their needs in their own lives.
Wow. Incredible. Yes. And maybe we talk a little bit about the NFT side, which has been quite hyped up lately as well with collectibles and the ability to earn collectibles in game, which really connects, I would say, a lot of it, let's say the traditional world or the real world to this world as well. Would you like to speak to us a little bit about that?
Yeah, absolutely. So within Alien Worlds, NFTs have utility. So they have attributes that are read by the gaming smart contracts and have powers. So, you know, if you have a particular type of shovel versus a particular type of extractor, that will have different power to mine within the mining game. And similarly, later on, minions will have different attack and defensive attributes as part of the fighting game, for example, and weapons similarly. So our NFTs are not primarily collectible. They're primarily actually utility NFTs within a game that allow you to do things within Alien Worlds. And that was all made possible by the fact that our NFTs are on the Wax blockchain and now on the BSC blockchain, which are, you know, smart contract chains that can actually, where you can encode fairly sophisticated interrelationships, as opposed to on Ethereum where NFTs have to be primarily collectible, right? Because there's less that the smart contracts can read off of their attributes. So that's how NFTs fit into our metaverse. They're like tools or they're signifiers of power and things that you can do. That's quite a technical description. I think the kind of emotional layer is that NFTs are fun. They're far more human, I think, than fungible tokens, right? We all love Bitcoin, but I don't suppose you would say that you have a kind of personal relationship with your Bitcoin collection. You know, we don't use that kind of terminology, do we? And yet you can with NFTs, right? You can have, you're collecting your different avatar NFTs, your different tools. We have community members that have created YouTube videos showing in detail what they describe as their mining rigs and how they select different tool and land combinations for their particular mining strategy. They go deep into the different attributes. They trade them with each other. They trade strategies with each other. You know, this is this is much more what we think of as gaming, right? When you can really develop a strategy and figure out what you want to do, advise other people, get their input. And this is also how people, you know, when I talk about a social metaverse, it's people finding their tribe, right? So if you're really into the mining game and you get onto our channels where people are talking about mining strategy, that's how you get to know other gamers who then maybe you will go off with and be part of the DAO structures. So the NFTs are a really emotional kind of component, I think. People form a strong emotional and connection with their NFTs, but they also have utility. I think in the future, we're looking at creating collectibles NFTs as well. But for now, our NFTs are utility NFTs within the metaverse. And I will also say that our community has created a lot of NFTs. Community NFTs and dropping those community NFTs are quite a big part, actually, of what incentivizes users to be in the metaverse and to interact with the metaverse. There's a whole business called Alien Worlds Butler, which reads all of the chain data. So because all of our gaming logic is on chain, anybody can read it, can look at it, right? And so he has a ton of data aggregation and data analysis. It's pretty intensive on servers, you know, to read all of those gaming actions, but he can see the different patterns of mining and offers as a service to create and drop NFTs for on behalf, for example, of landowners. So if you're a landowner in Alien Worlds and you want to incentivize people to mine on your land more, you can go to Alien Worlds Butler, which is just a private company, and he will arrange to do an NFT drop. We also have community groups that have created their own NFTs. We now have, you know, other games as sort of marketing and promotion coming into Alien Worlds and dropping their NFTs to spread the word about their projects. It's a very vibrant landscape.
Wow. Incredible. And it's great to see that the usability, the utility of NFTs as well, and that they're not just kind of there in your gallery or something like this. And so maybe following that point, I mean, are NFTs, I mean, just hype? I mean, there's a bit of controversy lately where people are like, oh, well, it's very hyped up. But seeing actually the usability of these NFTs, I mean, it seems like it's just the beginning. I mean, what are your thoughts?
Yeah, I mean, I think that anything that people can own and use, especially when that's within a project that gains a certain amount of scale, is likely to have longevity for the long run, you know? So once you own an Alien Worlds land NFT or an Alien Worlds tool NFT, you know, that is something that you own. It sits within your wallet. It, you know, you can see it on the blockchain in a block explorer. You know, that's something that then even another project could, or indeed a community group within Alien Worlds, can create games that where you can use that NFT in their game, right? Mm-hmm. So because it's decentralized, it doesn't really rely on any one project or team to kind of validate how you can use your NFT, which would have been the case in games previously, where, you know, if you had leveled up to a certain level, that didn't really have meaning outside of the walled garden of that particular game. Whereas in a decentralized game, once you have earned an NFT, it's yours. And, you know, especially once that game has reached, or that metaverse has reached a certain level of scale, you know, you can really imagine that lots of other community groups and projects will say, oh, look, there's 100,000 of these NFTs in it, you know, out there sitting in people's wallets. Let's create a game that uses them, right? Because then you're going to attract a bunch of users over to what you're doing. So there's this kind of built, this is also actually how we feel about DAOs. They build in legacy systems, right? So with a DAO, token holders can sell, they can buy, they can move in, they can move out. But there's a sort of continuous mechanism for the governance to keep going, even if the group of token holders fluctuates over time. There's legacy built in. And similarly with a blockchain metaverse or a game like this, I think there's legacy built in because the NFTs exist, and you know, later on people are going to want to create meaningful use cases for them. So I think that's quite a powerful thing that we haven't yet seen, sort of generation 2, 3, 4 of how the existing NFTs out there end up getting used.
Yeah, I see. Wow, incredible. And as we slowly approach, I mean, the end of this episode, unfortunately, maybe you can tell us a little bit more about why you decided to create a lot of this out of Zug, out of the Crypto Valley in Switzerland.
Yeah, that's a great story, actually. We were really looking around at different jurisdictions that would be the best place to sort of set up shop. We looked at Gibraltar, we looked at Malta, we looked at a couple of other jurisdictions. And I think that we really liked at the time the fact that the Zug government was, for example, accepting taxes in cryptocurrency. You know, once a government is putting skin in the game like that, you know that they're, firstly, they've gone through an effort to understand even what the technology is. They don't have a sort of aversion or fear about it. They were obviously positive. We also, I have to give credit to, we met a great entrepreneurial and extremely competent lawyer in Zug, who was really keen to, you know, help us incorporate the company and connect us up with, you know, banking and insurance and accountants and all the things that a company needs. And we found that there was a really great professional services environment in Zug for a crypto company like ours. I will say that at the time, we didn't actually realize that we would end up becoming as large as we've grown to be, you know. So I'm really grateful actually now that we did select Zug, because I think it's a great place for us to continue to scale and grow and have really great professional services and a really great regulatory environment around us. Yeah, I'm really grateful that that it all turned out that way.
Incredible. Yeah, it's always lovely to hear the inspiring stories coming out of our very own crypto valley. And as we wrap up the episode, maybe you can give us a little bit of macro perspective about where you believe the blockchain space as a whole is heading in the next year, 5 years, 10 years, and just the future ahead.
Yeah, I mean, look, I think that the evolution of the internet has been one of the technology making empowering people possible. Now, it hasn't always resulted in people becoming empowered, right? I mean, we can see in a way the progression of social media is that that's the type of technology that can really be great for people, can bring people together. It can also end up being something that just extracts value from users and in which users themselves are the product. So, you know, I think that what we can see so far is that there's a possibility for users and people to be extremely empowered by blockchain. It's a technology that allows people to own and track their ownership, to contribute to systems like DAOs in a way that where they can see that their contribution is delivering value that they then own. Similarly with NFTs, I think whether these systems and structures end up empowering people is what we all have to ensure and ends up happening, right? So continuing to create decentralized structures in which users have a say in how the system progresses, in which users learn about how to code and how to participate, you know, these will be really important in actually ensuring that blockchain remains decentralized, remains, you know, empowering to users and doesn't tend towards what sometimes systems can tend towards, which is a more exploitative, you know, relationship in which users become sort of the product that gets monetized. So, you know, I'm extremely excited. And I mean, I really back blockchain as a technology because of its capacity to disintermediate kind of value extracting middlemen who don't necessarily do much and instead allow users to share with each other peer to peer, and not only share, but actually own and build things that they, you know, it's sort of a more fundamental thing than just sharing, which is kind of what social media is. It's actually where users become the producers and the owners of the systems that they're in. And I think that's a really powerful construct and a powerful economic construct, powerful social construct. And I think it's up to all of us to ensure that it continues to be decentralized and continues to work for people. And also that, as I mentioned, you know, education is key. Like the technology is still really nascent and still too few people know how to code with it. You know, I mean, I know that because I'm constantly trying to hire people who can do it and there aren't that many of them, right? So, you know, the more people learn how to code with blockchain languages. And as I was mentioning, the kind of social technology around that as well, like how do you organize decentralized communities that are still fulfilling to be part of and that are still, you know, value generative in the long run? I think that's a really interesting thing for us all to think about. You can probably tell that I'm coming at this answer from the perspective of someone who founded a dApp and runs a dApp, right? Rather than someone who runs an exchange or is an investor. You know, I don't run a crypto fund. And so I'm not going to give you a kind of macro take on where prices are going, because to me, that's kind of not. But what we're trying to do is to build a technology and social processes that empower people. And so, yeah, 5-10 years, I see this as the future. I see DAOs actually as quite foundational to that future. As I mentioned, it's a native blockchain structure for organizing human activity and tracking stake and value. So I think that's a really important story as part of it. And yeah, I'm just hugely excited to be part of the space. I think it's a wonderful way that people can be empowered.
Wonderful. Sounds like technology for the people. Very, very inspiring. And well, thank you so much for joining us today, Sarah. Do you have any final words for our listeners today regarding where they might be able to find more about what you're doing? Anything?
Absolutely. Please come and be part of the metaverse, meet friends and meet other people that you want to create stuff within the metaverse. So you can find us at alienworlds.io. We have a really vibrant Telegram and Discord channel where you can meet other people. You can play the mining game at play.alienworlds.io. And we also are releasing, we have a big release this week and next week of our missions game on the Binance Smart Chain. So please look out on our channels for announcements about that and send spacecraft on missions to curate a collection of NFTs.
Incredible. Well, great. And if you enjoy this conversation, feel free to check out more on our website, cryptovalley.swiss, where we host plenty of events, educational material, and even provide information on how you can join our growing community. So thanks again, Sarah, for joining us.
Thanks so much, Shiraz. Great to meet with you today.
My pleasure. Stay tuned, stay safe, and until next time from the Crypto Valley in Switzerland. Bye-bye.